Welcome back to More Than Money on 770 CHQR. Andrew Masson filling in for Dave Popowich. I'm Faisal Karmali, and you know, every quarter, Andrew, we get to bring in some of the most smartest and brightest minds on this show when it comes to markets, economy, portfolios, and so forth. We're privileged to have these individuals on our show. And
I thought you were referring to me.
I was getting to the next guest, too, of course.
Okay. Well, he's definitely smarter than I am.
Well, he's definitely smarter than all of us here on this show right now. And he's been a reoccurring guest on this show, giving us some great information and insight. And let's talk about, you know, what's happening in the markets and where things are going to go. We've got Philip Peterson, Chief Investment Strategist with Manulife Investment Management. Philip, welcome back.
Right. Thanks for having me, gentlemen. It's a great pleasure to be speaking to you yet again today.
And so the last time you were on the show, we were just getting started with this whole pandemic. We were talking about what the issues could be. Let's kind of give everybody a refresher of our conversation and what your thoughts were leading up to, let's call it the end of June, where we had the mid-break or the mid-year. And let's talk about what your thoughts were, what were you expecting, what changed, and we can take it from there.
Certainly. If we go all the way back to February and March, as we started the downturn in the market, the bear market, we felt that, you know, when we hit the lows of March 23rd, that we could have seen a little bit more downside. We felt that we were more than halfway through, maybe two-thirds of the way through, and we really looked at it in the context of historical bear markets, recessionary bear markets. And on average, in a recession, you tend to see a bear market in the S&P 500, our U.S. equity benchmark, of approximately 40%. And from February 19th to March 23rd, we were down 35%. So, you know, we just sit there and say, look, this is going to be a sharper recession than we've seen in the past. It's probably going to be a lot shorter as well. It's going to be very compressed. You know, but we were surprised that the downside was limited to just 35%. Mm-hmm. At that time, though, you know, towards the end of March, as we started to see a recovery, we were at the point where we were saying, look, valuation is reasonable and we think attractive enough to actually start to slowly add back to equities. So we increased our equity weight in our model portfolio by 5%. So we were underweight at 50%, increased it to 55%, so still underweight. In hindsight, gentlemen, you know, I would have loved to, with everything that we know now in terms of how the market has responded, I'd love to take that back and go, no, put it all in. Let's go 20%, you know, overweight equities at this point in time. But there wasn't enough data to support that. And even to today, there isn't enough data really to support being aggressive into these markets. And yet here we are, we've seen a really quite unbelievable and unprecedented recovery in equities. And we're starting to see a slow recovery in the U.S. economy, in the Canadian economy, in economies overseas. But to me, it feels like perhaps we've pulled forward returns that should have come over the next 12 months into 12 weeks. That doesn't mean you want to shun equities because the news is getting better. But, you know, we still have a little bit of hesitancy before we really want to be aggressive into these equity markets.
Philip, we had a bunch of money being thrown out to the public in multiple ways. We've had the central banks pretty much around the world pump money into the economy or trying to prevent a financial crisis. And then we've also had fiscal, we'll call it stimulus, I call it destruction prevention plan. And they're throwing money to everybody from, you know, programs in the United States to keep people from who've lost their jobs. Same here in Canada. They're giving minimums of, let's call it $2,000 a month here in Canada. Were you expecting that when we saw this pandemic happen? Like, were you expecting all, throw everything you can to prevent a depression?
Not quite to the extent that we've seen. Now, on the government side, first, let me applaud what they've done. I think if the government is going to mandate a shutdown, if the government is going to say you can't go to work in these industries, then they have to provide some type of financial support. You can't have it both ways. You're saying, you know, you can't go to work, but you're on your own. You know, good luck. So I think they've done the right things. And obviously, if you shut down the economy to the extent that we have, it is costly. On the monetary side, with what the central banks have done, particularly in the United States, you have the Federal Reserve that has increased its balance sheet by $3 trillion. It's a massive amount. it was greater than what we thought. So this is greater than what we saw in QE1 or QE2. It's a pretty significant amount. And it's actually been quite successful in that when the Fed has done quantitative easing in the past, the idea is to increase the money supply, to create monetary inflation. And with QE1 and QE2 in 2008 and 2011, it didn't actually work. In this case, it's worked, and the money supply has shot up by almost $3 trillion. It's almost dollar for dollar. And that's been kind of the backstop to what we've seen in the equity markets and the fixed income markets. This is why the fixed income markets have rebounded quite strongly, and the equity markets have rebounded quite strongly. It is a greater amount, like the Fed has thrown everything at the problem. Then it's more than what we would have anticipated. It appears to have worked for the short term anyway. There will be long-term consequences to this, both fiscal spending as well as monetary stimulus that will be felt for, you know, down the road, thankfully not in the near term, but down the road, we're going to have to think about these things over the course of the next, you know, 2 to 5 years, what it means to markets and to economies.
Well, and with the stimulus, especially from the U.S. Fed as the example, we've got all this money coming into the system, Philip. What does that mean for inflation as we move forward into the coming years?
Yeah, well, we've already seen some inflation. So what we say is money always finds a home. And so if the Federal Reserve is going to increase the money in circulation by $3 trillion, it's going to get somewhere. Now, you and I aren't about to go and borrow to buy a new boat, new car, whatever. Maybe we are, but for the majority, I would say we're not. And so that money has found its way into the asset classes, mm-hmm. equities, bonds, gold. So we're seeing inflation at the asset price level. We do think this will turn into consumer price inflation. And we've got examples of this in the past where when you run deficits like we're running in the U.S. and Canada, it's about 17% to GDP. In the U.S., it's going to be 15 to 20% of GDP. And then you have the monetary inflation. I do think some of the consequences down the road is going to be higher inflation overall. But I think it's going to come, in particular in the United States, through a devaluation of the U.S. dollar. Right? And it almost stands to reason. You increase the money supply, the value of the dollar is likely to fall.
Philip, one thing that you and I have been talking about offline a lot throughout this pandemic was you and I have been looking at primarily 7 major economic indicators to determine if recession is going to be here or not. And some of those indicators are just now irrelevant or are not relevant at this time, given the pandemic when you have a global shutdown. There's always alternative data, and you and your team have looked up some alternative data. What are some of the things you're looking at through this pandemic to give you a sense of what's really happening in the economy when certain, what we'll call go-to economic indicators are no longer the go-to at this point in time?
And you're absolutely right. You know, the chart that we have or the table that we have that looks at preconditions for a recession, we've actually taken that out because it's meaningless at this point. We do have the National Bureau of Economic Research in the United States that has declared a recession in the U.S., and that's, you know, kind of big surprise, right? I mean, everyone knew that was coming. So other things that we have to look at that are giving us some positive indicators that, yes, we are starting to see a recovery. One of the things that I paid attention to just recently, again, like pops up on our screen, is copper prices. Mm-hmm. So we look at copper. You know, it's known as or called Dr. Copper. You know, copper has a PhD in the global economy. And this is because copper is an input into so many consumer products, mm-hmm. you know, automobiles, housing, electronics, you name it. What we've seen in copper prices over the last couple of months is almost a full recovery in the price of copper. It's around $2.85 a pound now. It's well within its prior high. And this historically has been a good sign that, you know, the global economy is starting to pick up. In particular, we're seeing it in China, where mm-hmm. we do have somewhat of a V-shaped recovery in a number of the economic indicators. Electricity usage in China. We're looking at rail freight in China that has rebounded, auto sales that have rebounded. And so these are some of the other signs. And then what's really interesting is Google and Apple.
Yes.
We never thought we would, you know, look at Google and Apple for trends, but because we're attached to our mobile phone and we're looking for directions to go wherever, to Uncle Ned's place, Google and Apple are tracking mobility in the United States. And they're breaking it down by segment, residential, office, retail, and so on. And here, too, slowly we're seeing recoveries in traffic patterns in the United States, which is just validating that, yeah, you know what? The worst is probably behind us. And we are starting to improve at a slow pace, but it's an improvement nonetheless.
Okay, we're going to put a pause here. We have to pay some bills by going to commercial break. When we come back, Philip's going to talk about where do you put your money now that we've already seen some major recovery in this market, and how do you going to profit and protect along the way? You're listening to 770 CHQR and More Than Money.